you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, road games get tougher and tougher. Oh,
there's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Cross ice pass, now an up top for Wheeler, slap shot, he scores! Blake Wheeler with a one-timer, it's a power play goal, and the Jets open up the scoring, it's 1-0 Winnipeg.
That first period power play goal by the Jets captain proved to be the game winner. The Jets defeat the Blues. They win a must-win contest by a 3-0 margin. Two empty net goals sealed it for the Jets, one by Brian Little, and then Wheeler, the captain, gets his second of the game, his third point of the night. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here at the palatial TSN 1290 studios. You can also follow us on Facebook if that's your social media medium of choice. And, of course, our website, illegalcurve.com. It's got full game recaps, full audio, all the news you'd want from both a Jets victory last night at home and a Moose victory last night in Rockford, Illinois, when the Moose win their fourth in a row. Dave Minuk correcting me. Dave Minuk, Moose insider. Dave Minuk in studio here with me. He's on my far left, the man in the middle, playing hurt, but nice to see you anyways there, Ezzy Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good morning. Like I said, a must-win game for the Jets last night against the St. Louis Blues. They trailed the Blues in the standings. Blues not currently in a playoff spot, but the Jets trailed them in the standings. And before the Jets can really think about a playoff spot, as unlikely as it may be, they need to first catch the St. Louis Blues and pass the St. Louis Blues. And so with last night's victory, they moved to within 3 points of the Blues. They moved to within 4 points of the LA Kings for that final Western Conference playoff spot, the second wild card spot. Both teams have games in hand. But for the Winnipeg Jets, coming off of a poor performance on Tuesday against the Wild, particularly in the defensive side of things, this was a much better effort and an effort that they can emulate and use it as an example of the way they would want to play night in and night out if they had their druthers.
Yeah, and the big number, Drew, was that they didn't allow any goals. And we've seen the Jets allow quite a few goals at home especially, and Connor Hellebuyck was really solid. He started, 10 games in a row now? And when you look at this game, heading into this game, there were a lot of storylines, right? You had the Blues having lost 4 games in a row. You had the return of Jacob Trouba, and you had the return of Andrew Copp and Marco Dano. And maybe Andrew Copp and Marco Dano weren't as big of an impact as you would like. I thought they still looked pretty good in their first games in quite a while, especially Marco Dano.
He was an agitator.
Right. He hadn't played since the end of December. So yeah. I thought the word for me that really stood out as far as this game goes was the Jets were very efficient. And I didn't think Connor Hellebuyck necessarily stole the game, but he was very good. And the Jets just didn't give a lot to the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, watching that game, the St. Louis Blues don't look like a good hockey team.
No, they didn't.
And I realize they're in a playoff spot right now, but
no,
what has happened to this Blues team and their identity? And, you know, you have Vladimir Tarasenko. He doesn't have any points in his last 4 games. Alexander Steen doesn't have any points in his last 5 games. Jaden Schwartz has 1 point in his last 4 games. I mean, the guys that get paid the big bucks for St. Louis are just not producing right now. And it looked like St. Louis was comfortably in a playoff spot, and they've let the Jets and Kings back into it. So,
well, the Kings have overtaken the Blues now. The Kings have a game or a point up on the St. Louis Blues. And you're absolutely right, as I thought the Blues last night, and it's a combination of the Jets deserve credit, because the Jets did a very good job as a five-man unit in stifling the St. Louis Blues offensively. But the Blues themselves certainly didn't there was very little pushback. I mean, it was a 3-0 win, and it's a little misleading because, of course, two of the three goals by the Jets were into an empty net. But if it wasn't for Carter Hutton and a number of the saves he made, particularly in the second period when the Jets peppered him with shots, this game would have been 3-0, 4-0 on its own without needing empty net goals. So the only reason that this was a close game right down to the wire, right down till, you know, Brian Little blew past Alex Pietrangelo with about 2.5 minutes to go in the game and get that empty net goal, the only reason was Carter Hutton. The Blues themselves, the skaters on the Blues, didn't show anything at all last night.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because Tarasenko, who's had some, you know, good numbers against the Jets, he didn't look like he was even visible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a credit to the defense. I think Tobias Enstrom played a lot better. I think he had 5 blocks. You know, the Connor Hellebuck, Jacob Trouba after the game were talking about the impact that Tobias Enstrom had. He had one big, you know, he got his, you know, everybody talks about the long stick that he uses, and he used it efficiently. In one point, there was a pass over. I don't remember who.
It was a 2-on-1 attempt.
And it was pretty much an empty net at that point, and he prevented the pass from getting over. So I thought Tobias Enstrom played a much better game. It looked like he maybe came a little early for that Minnesota game. Wasn't 100% as we saw. And I think he looked a lot better. Jacob Trouba was a beast last night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might be in beast mode still. And it's funny because we were talking to him after the game. And he, you know, we said, well, what's going on? You know, you seem to take these breaks and play, you know, even better. You're not showing any rest. And he says, you know, I think I play a little bit better with a little bit of rest, because he was unbelievable. And he didn't really show any effect from being off for as long as he was.
6 hits for Trouba last night. He was definitely, I mean, the Jets were physical. I thought the whole team was physical. Marco Dano was physical. Matthew Perreault, of course. Nikolai Ehlers even laid a body check on Ryan Reeves.
And
knocked Ryan Reeves over. But Jacob Trouba was, I mean, he was the anchor on the back end for the Jets, not to take anything away from Morrissey or Byfuglien or Enstrom, because really the whole team played well, and that coupled with the St. Louis Blues performance really allowed the Jets to have that solid victory last night.
The truth is the team was responsible. They didn't take a lot of chances. They didn't give up a lot of chances, and that's what they have to do. And they spoke about it after the game, and they said, we can't get into these races where we're trying to trade opportunities and outscore our opponents and outscore our mistakes. Mm-hmm. You have to be efficient, as he talked about a few minutes ago. So, you know, you take the opportunities you get. You know, they score on the power play. An unexpected Blake Wheeler blast from the point.
Yeah.
That, you know, his 18th goal at the time. And you know, it's funny because we were a little bit, you know, it's interesting that how Patrick Laine was used again, you know, not necessarily given a lot of power play time. I don't know his final power play numbers.
His final power play numbers, I have them handy. He played 3 minutes and 40 seconds on the power play.
Okay, that's not bad.
And, well, you're speaking about what happened was there was a power play, I believe it was in the second period.
Yeah.
And the Jets had zone control. Laine's line, I think, had just finished the shift, so
right.
The other power play unit came on, and they had zone control for much of, really, I think, close to 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And so by the time the Laine power play unit came on, it was late in the power play, and they really couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, and I just think it's funny because the fans are chanting Laine, Laine.
Well, because what happened on the next power play
is,
you know, next power play opportunity for the Jets, Paul Maurice chose to go with that same, the non-Laine power play unit.
The top one, he called
it. The top one, if you want to call it that, to start the power play again. And the fans did not respond, you know, nicely to that by, like you said, that was when you heard the "We Want Laine" chant on the power play coming out of the 300 level. But I thought that was a bit of an interesting decision to not go with Laine's unit first on that second power play after the earlier one in the second period.
Right, and it's unfortunate that Laine's 6-game point streak is snapped, but we know that he is playing probably the best hockey of the season, just won Rookie of the Month, right? But, you know, we talk about the power play, but to me, what was the most impressive is the way they played in their own zone. And that's the big issue for this team all year, and it's been an issue in previous years, right? Connor Hellebuck picks up his 4th shutout of the season, but I agree with Dave. I thought Toby Enstrom was a lot better. Mm-hmm. Toby Enstrom, I think, has really struggled, especially in the second half of the season. And Dave mentions, you know, Jacob Trouba. They get a huge boost having Jacob Trouba back in the lineup. We know how much he plays. He was right around 23, 24 minutes, and he was playing a little bit on the power play. But, you know, I go back to this Blues team, and you take Kevin Shattenkirk out of this lineup, and Robbie Fabry's injured. you know, after, you know, three or four players, it's just a lineup that I don't think is very good, quite frankly. And, you know, you look at who's competing for these last playoff spots here. And L.A., we know they're having trouble scoring goals. The Jets are not having trouble scoring goals. So there's an opportunity here for the Jets to get in. And, you know, we have a game tonight against Colorado. But, you know, St. Louis losing five games in a row right now, I mean, it's unacceptable. And Mike Yeo took over for Ken Hitchcock, and you watched that game yesterday, and they kind of look listless, Drew.
Yeah, listless would be a good word to describe them, because with a roster as talented as their top, whatever you think of their bottom six, and your point is well taken, whatever you think of their top six, it's pretty talented. But they really didn't show anything last night. You're absolutely right, Ezzy. Guys, you know, a number of their name players were relatively invisible for much of the 60 minutes of the contest. And is that a combination of the Jets shutting them down? Well, the Jets played well defensively, but this Jets team isn't, you know, they're not really in a position where they're ever shutting anybody down.
Right.
It's a combination of them playing well defensively and the opponent not doing much on the offensive side.
Well, that's what they're going to have to do here, guys, for the rest of the season, right? We know Tyler Myers is not coming back for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually even thought Ben Chiarot and Paul Postma were solid on that third D pairing for the Jets. So it was an overall...
Postma got turned around early in the game. I think it was a good chance, if I recall correctly. Pardon me?
It was
Berglund,
yeah.
In the first period, Hellebuyck had to make one of the nicer of his saves in the course of the game. He was very good, very solid, big in net. And that was, I think, within the first 5 or 7 minutes of the game when it was still, I think, a 0-0 game. He had to make a nice save after Berglund sort of walked around Paul Postma.
You know, and credit to the veterans. I mean, that play by Brian Little to get that empty net goal, mm-hmm. I mean, that was unbelievable. I mean, you know, and it's funny because afterwards I tweeted, you know, not all empty net goals are created equally. And it's true, because if you saw the effort to get that, knowing how important it is with, you know, the Blues trying to tie the game up, and he could have just been, like, happy to get the puck out. But he really, I mean, he outworked, you know.
Yeah.
And he got to the puck and he put it in. And
Pietrangelo had been on the ice for a minute 23 at that point.
True.
But Little gets full credit.
I was going to say, and I'm fairly certain Little had been on the ice as well for that full time. So, I mean, you know, again, knowing the point of the game it is and what that goal does. And not only that, I mean, historically, that goal moves him into second all time in this franchise history.
Yeah, passing Ray Ferraro?
Slava Kozlov for 417. Now he has 418 because he obviously got an assist on the Wheeler's empty net goal. But so, I mean, I just thought it was a nice play by Brian Little to really kind of put a cherry on top for the game. You know, they played well defensively. And then he, you know, put the Jets on and got an important, you know, goal.
The more deserving team won last night. That's certainly the case. Quickly, your thoughts on the new sort of power play setup with Blake Wheeler manning the top of the 1-3-1. And there was some good... I'm not sure how much I love Blake Wheeler up there. He doesn't really have the slap shot that's really a weapon, despite having scored on it in last night's game. That wouldn't be what I would describe as a big weapon in his arsenal. But I thought the puck movement and I thought the player movement in that sort of new look power play was pretty impressive last night.
Yeah, and it obviously worked, right, with Blake Wheeler getting the first goal. But I think what it does is it gives you an option, because Blake Wheeler is usually on the half boards and Dustin Byfuglien is usually at the point. So what it does is it allows you to maybe set up Buff on the half boards and maybe allows Wheeler, you know, some opportunity to move and then maybe switch with whoever that other forward is going to be, whether it's Nikolai Ehlers or Perreault, right?
Yeah.
So when the power play, you know, has been struggling a little bit, you got to try new things. And, you know, in this case it worked, and, you know, they'll probably switch it up again if it's not working. It's pretty common for, you know, formations to be changed.
Yeah, Dave.
You know, I just thought there was a lot of movement, and I think that was good. I think that they weren't passive, and I like that. I like the fact that they were, you know, as you just talked about, there was a lot of switching, and there wasn't a fear of like you weren't standing stationary waiting for the puck to get to you. You were moving to get into a spot to get open, and I thought that was good. And you know, they scored one power play goal in five opportunities, so it wasn't like they were lights out.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that they had pretty good control, and I think, like, you know, there's some things they need to do. But, you know, having Dano in front causing some chaos, having Lowry in front causing some chaos, those are the guys, you know, the big bodies that you want to be blocking out the goalie and giving you an opportunity to get that shot, you know, set up a Patrick Laine or Dustin Byfuglien with the shot. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I didn't think it looked bad yesterday.
Yeah, certainly a very impressive all-around performance last night by the Winnipeg Jets. No time to rest on their laurels, though. They have the Colorado Avalanche in town later on tonight. Of course, a 6 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets and the Avs. We'll also look ahead to Monday and the Jets and the Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
He lobs it all the way down and bounces it toward the line. Picked up there by Nieto. Now he shoots past Bufflin into the empty net, and that'll do it here this afternoon as Colorado will make it a 5-2 hockey game with 38 seconds remaining in the third period. Matt Nieto will get his second of the day.
The last time the Jets and the Avs met, it was a disappointing result for the team from Winnipeg. The Jets look for a better fate tonight as they meet the Avalanche at home. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Hopefully Nikolai Ehlers and, you know, I think it was Matthew Perreault also got a high stick last night.
Yep.
Yeah, both those guys. Hopefully they were, I assume they were wearing their mouth guards, as all good hockey players do.
Have them chomp it, though, if you notice. A lot of times hockey players.
Yeah, chewing it like it's a cut or something. But yes. I mean, Ryan Reeves sort of, he lowered the crown of his helmet into Nikolai Ehlers there, and he served a penalty, and then Perreault got high stick, and can't remember who served the penalty for the Blues there. But in any event, hopefully nobody lost any teeth. Hopefully, none of them were an Ezzy. They all wore their mouth guard, maybe from Linden Market Dental Center itself. In any event, the Jets and the Avs tonight, 6 p.m. Questions to start with. First of all, no pregame skates for either team. So we won't know anything about roster lineups. We won't know anything about goaltending decisions until later on this afternoon. Of course, you'll probably hear that live either on H&L or on the pregame show with Rick, so you can just stay tuned here to TSN 1290. Would you go back with Hellebuck? You have a situation where, you know, the Jets had been off since Tuesday, so they had a sort of a quiet couple days there, Wednesday, Thursday. He played last night. Wasn't what I would describe as overwhelmingly taxed. Wasn't a 40 save effort or anything. Very solid sort of workmanlike effort for Connor Hellebuck last night. Would you go back with him, or would you maybe begin to think about giving a start to either Michael Hutchinson, who was the backup last night, or Andre Pavlik, if Pavlik is ready to get back into the lineup? That's a big if, of course. You also have to keep in mind that the Jets have the San Jose Sharks coming here on Monday. So if you were to go with Hellebuck, theoretically it would be a 3-4 night situation. Is there any question here, or is it Hellebuck 100% from your perspective?
Drew, for me it's Hellebuck, and it's based on the way he's played. Not just yesterday getting the shutout, but the fact that he started 10 of the last 10 games. So when you're talking about today's game, it's obviously an important one. It's not a four-point game because Colorado is obviously out of the playoff picture, but I think you go with Hellebuck again. And we talked about it. He was very solid last night in the win, and I think there's no reason, in my opinion, not to use Connor Hellebuck. I mean, we've seen Connor Hellebuck play back-to-back games, and we've seen Connor Hellebuck pick up wins in back-to-back game. So for me, it's not a question. I go with Hellebuck.
I mean, generally, they say that your numbers are going to decrease when you use a goalie, you know, in the second game of a back-to-back. But he, as you said, Drew, he wasn't overly taxed. I mean, I'm looking at his saves. He had 11 in the first period, 8 in the second, and 10 in the third. Mm-hmm. So, or shots, I should say. So it wasn't an overly hard game. He didn't take a lot of, you know, pain. There wasn't, like, a lot of physical contact with him in the game last night. So, clearly Coach Maurice doesn't have a lot of faith in his backups and whoever he's going to have the option, whether it's Andre Pavlik or Michael Hutchinson. And I suspect it would be Michael Hutchinson because he used him last night. Yeah. And while it sounded like he said Andre Pavlik would be ready to play, or at least he didn't say play. He said we'd be ready to back up, actually, was what he said.
What?
He said that this weekend. Now, the truth was that after practice on Friday, on Thursday, he said that Andre came off the ice okay, but his off ice wasn't perfect, so that's why he held him out last night.
And it's hard to believe that there'd be an opportunity for his off-ice to sort of get to the level they need in the second half of a back-to-back. Obviously, there's no skate or anything today. I believe there is an availability at MTS Center for the players. I think Paul Maurice said that in the coach's comments
last
night.
He did, but the Jets sent out a release.
They sent out a release that there's nothing? Yeah. Okay, there you go. So clearly, I think it looks like Andre Pavlik, it's hard to believe they'd be able to put him back in as a in a backup role until he gets that off-ice workout or until he gets that workout in and gets comfortable. So with Michael Hutchinson as your backup option, well, I think you, it almost makes up your decision for you because there's no way you can have any confidence in...
Hellebuck starting today.
Put it in the bank.
Put it in the...
That's like Ezzy.
So says it the Ezzy.
I would be pretty shocked if he didn't.
Yeah, I would be shocked too. And I think that's... I think he would be... If Pavlik was his backup available, I think Paul Maurice might be tempted to go with Pavlik. But given that it's Hutchinson, and I don't think the coach has any faith in Michael Hutchinson, I think he has to go with Hellebuck. He doesn't really have another option right now.
Yeah, and with the Jets in the playoff race, you're going to have to start Hutchinson eventually. And I realize you have another back-to-back coming up. But I don't think you want Michael Hutchinson not playing for 3-4 weeks at a time, right? So I think you will see him play eventually, but it probably won't be on this homestand if Hellebuck continues to play like this.
Yeah, well,
it's... well, especially based on the critical nature of these games. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, tonight, as much as every game is a must-win, tonight you can't afford to lose tonight against the Colorado Avalanche.
And the irony of it is there's been so many different instances this year where you have the Avalanche, you sort of are feeling good about yourself.
Right.
I think it's either this will be the third instance where you're coming off a victory, you go in to play twice you went into Denver,
right,
and you lost both those games. There was the game, the Nikolai Ehlers' own goal game. Yeah. There was that game with that clip we just played where they lost on that Saturday afternoon in Denver. And you've played this Colorado Avalanche team a couple different times this year where you've come in off of victory, you're feeling good about yourself, and the Avalanche have been a bit of a bugaboo for the Jets. They've been the most bugaboo team you really in the Central Division, given how good the Jets have played against the Stars, the Blues, and the Blackhawks this year. It's sort of surprising that they've struggled against the Avalanche.
The Avalanche have beat the Jets 3 times this year.
Yeah, that's
and
what I'm saying.
You almost wonder if the Avalanche are in the Jets' head, similar to kind of the way the Jets were in the Blackhawks' head until Chicago eventually defeated the Jets in their 5th meeting. So, look, at the Avalanche are the worst team in the league. They've been the worst team in the league for most of the year. This is a must-win game. You have no excuses not to beat this team. If you don't beat this team tonight, your chances of making the playoffs are significantly decreased, and you don't want to lose to the Colorado Avalanche for a 4th time because, you know, after Nathan MacKinnon and Matt Duchene and a few other players, I mean, this is the worst group of forwards and defensemen in the NHL. And to boot, Semyon Varlamov is out of the lineup. So you're most likely going to get Calvin Pickard. They have a game tomorrow at home, and so maybe they go with Jeremy Smith. But regardless if it's Calvin Pickard, who's actually a pretty underrated goalie.
I think they give it to Pickard simply because of the local factor. I mean,
right.
He's coming home to play in front of him. He'll have some friends and family in town for the game. The start tonight for the Jets, I think, is especially important. This Colorado Avalanche team, if you can jump on them early, and if you can get a goal past whoever their goaltender is, and you can be feeling good about yourself, they have no reason at this course in the season to really demonstrate any fight. There'd be no reason for them to fight back. But if the Avalanche come out strong, and if they're maybe able to get the first goal, and they've had the Jets' number this year so far, maybe at that point in time they'll be able to try and continue to feel good about themselves in what has been a terrible year in Denver.
I agree with you on that. The way the Jets came out in the first period, and Nikolai Ehlers almost scored on the breakaway, and you maybe go up 2-0, and the similar start has to happen for the Jets tonight. And when you're talking about this Avalanche team, I mean, what they can play for now is just the role of spoiler, and that's it. Because any statistical category, they're the worst in the NHL or near the bottom, whether that's goals for, goals against, their power play's bad, the PK's bad. They're a bad team.
Yeah.
So, and you're right, Drew, they have been a bugaboo for the Jets this year, but if you really want to have a good chance at winning tonight and getting into the playoffs, then you got to win this game.
Well, what's happening is tonight, of course, you play. The Blues are off tonight. So with the Jets, the Blues actually have the Avalanche tomorrow back in Denver. So with the Jets, with a victory tonight, the Jets could move to within 1 point of the St. Louis Blues.
Would have 3 games in hand.
They have 3 games in hand. The Blues would make up one of those games tomorrow, of course. And the Jets' schedule, I mean, we've talked about it. The Jets' schedule certainly isn't easy as you head down the stretch drive here towards the end of the year. You have coming in on Monday, you have the San Jose Sharks, a team that could very easily represent the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals. You have the Pittsburgh Penguins on Wednesday. You have a playoff team in the Calgary Flames the following Saturday. And then you head on the road for three. Two of them, one against Nashville, playoff team. The Islanders, they're right now a playoff team. And the Devils, they're not a playoff team. But the schedule doesn't get any easier. You have this Avalanche game, and this is sort of your last game against one of the true bottom feeders in the league. This is your final game against the Avs. It's your final game against the Coyotes. It's your final game against you don't play the Hurricanes or the Red Wings again. So it is important for the Jets to really jump on a wounded and not very good Colorado Avalanche team tonight at MTS Center.
Yeah, and I think the start, is, as Ez talked about, is the critical factor in tonight's game. I think, like, you can't afford to go down one or two goals just because, like, And you know what? I look, the Jets are 2-2 against the Avalanche this season, but still, it doesn't matter. The games have been close, and the fact is that, you know, if you let these guys get in your head, you're going to have it. You know, you don't want to have to be playing from behind.
No,
if you're the
certainly
Jets.
Not.
And especially based on the way you played last night and the fact that you're playing a back-to-back and you're playing against a fresh Avalanche team, because I think they played in Ottawa when, on Thursday?
I believe they played in Ottawa on Thursday. They came here Thursday night. They practiced at Iceplex yesterday.
Right. So they've
been in town for a couple days.
That's right. So they're rested. They're fine. But the fact is that you need to have a good start. You need to feel good about yourself. Keep that kind of, you know, because the one thing that people are talking about is how do you bottle yesterday's, you know, to the players, how do you bottle that and then bring it forward? And that's the key. It's one thing to have a nice game against a reeling Blues team, but can you continue that? And can you not take Colorado? I mean, we sound like we're taking them fairly lightly, but the fact is you can't afford to with the firepower they still have on their team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Ezzy's right. There's a lot of things that they're not good at, but they still have some offense, so you can't let them get an early goal or two.
The Jets and the Avs, 6 p.m. tonight on TSN 1290. When we come back, Michael Trakos joins us. We'll look back at what was a busy Wednesday in the NHL trade deadline. We'll talk to Michael about the NHL in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Michael Trakos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. You can see his work in the National Post and in the Winnipeg Sun, among many other fine newspapers. Michael, good morning. How are you, sir?
Hey, pretty good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well, Michael. Wanted to bring you on, of course, to take a whip around the league after the trade deadline came and went this past Wednesday. But before we do, I want to ask you about, I'm not sure if it's called Maurice Gate or if it's called Babcock Gate, but from your perspective and maybe the perspective there in Toronto, how did Paul Maurice's comments last night about Babcock go over?
Oh, I didn't even hear those comments. Sorry.
Oh, my apologies in that case there, Mike. Yeah. He sort of took some people interpreted it as a shot at Babcock. Others took it as a shot at the Toronto media. But we'll skip over that one.
We'll get apprised of everything.
That's okay. That's okay.
I'm missing all the controversies now.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe I'm making up a controversy where none exists. That's also equally possible.
No, I wouldn't do that ever.
So now let's shift our focus to the trade deadline. It came and went on Wednesday. Did anything change in your mind? Were the Stanley Cup favorites? Are they still the Stanley Cup favorites? Did anybody get a boost in your mind, or did anybody drop back, or did you think that it was just sort of an arms race among those teams that are already expected to contend for the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I don't think anyone, like, in my mind, I think there's still like the big five when you're looking at it. It's Washington, Pittsburgh, Chicago, San Jose, and Minnesota. I think those teams, no one actually inched closer to those teams. And if anything, maybe Washington took another half step forward as the, I guess, perennial favorites. And we've been down this road before with the Caps where Great regular season, and yet the playoffs has been a different story, similar to what San Jose has done for years over in the West. So I like the move in getting Kevin Shattenkirk. I think, if anything, more power plays are happening later in the season than ever before. It seems like referees are not putting away the whistle, even in overtime, much to the chagrin of John Tortorella the other night. So I think if you get a power play specialist in Shattenkirk, you just increase your chances of getting that late goal. And similar to what Florida did in getting Vanek, where everyone's kind of head-scratching, going, why would you get a guy like Vanek? Well, you know what? Power play goals are so important, and Florida's not going to be a Stanley Cup contender, but I think for a playoff contender, they took a huge stride. So I like those two teams in terms of what they were able to accomplish. And I do like San Jose and getting Yannick Hansen. I think that was another kind of depth move, another scorer, speedy guy that add to their forward rank. So there are a lot of kind of minor moves that kind of address a lot of teams' problems. Even Toronto and getting Brian Boyle. He's not going to play defense for them, but in terms of a fourth-line center, that might be one of the better fourth lines now in the league. It's just a matter of can they get the defensive help in Toronto.
Now, Michael, you just mentioned the Maple Leafs. They lost last night to the Anaheim Ducks 5-2, and Mitch Marner's back in the lineup. How do you see this team getting back, you know, where they were originally? Because they've really struggled, only winning 3 of their last 10.
It's tough. You know, like the games right now, I think everyone sees it. They're going to be tighter, especially for Toronto. They're going kind of in uncharted territory. Seems like the NHL schedule is always kind of split up into segments. And as you get closer to the playoffs, everything just ramps up and the games get tighter, tighter checking. Less space out there, and really that one goal can make a huge difference. And we saw it the other night in San Jose where Jake Gardner and James Van Riemsdyk, I guess, combined for a gaffe that leads to a goal and robs the team of a point. And the other night in L.A., same kind of thing where they just can't seem to get it done and get that extra point in the shootout. And last night, just a comedy of errors as they went down into the second and third period. Really contributed to another kind of tough loss for them. So, I don't know. I almost put Toronto in Winnipeg's category where you're going, okay, you can live with a bit of a disappointment this season if they don't make the playoffs because you just see so much promise there. And I think both teams, if you're a fan, there's no reason to be kind of on the ledge here and just kind of saying, oh, man, it was a terrible year. Like, in Toronto, you've got Matthews, you've got Marner, you've got Nylander, Winnipeg, you've got Scheifele and Laine and Ehlers. Like, there's a lot of hope, and I think if fans can kind of keep perspective down the stretch, it shouldn't really matter if these teams make the playoffs or not. There's going to be better days ahead.
Michael, when TSN is touting the return of Jay and Dan or the reacquisition of Jay and Dan as the big news of trade deadline, you know it was slow, but why do you think Canadian teams were smart to steer clear of any big splashy deals?
Well, they're not contenders, let's be honest. Matt Duchene going to Ottawa or Matt Duchene going to Montreal was not going to bring them into cup contender territory. I'm sorry, those teams are more than one piece away. And same thing with, like, the Edmontons and the Torontos and Calgarys. Like, this is not the year. If you're going to go all in and you're a Canadian team, you got to wait a couple years at least. Like, in Edmonton, well, let's see Connor McDavid get a little playoff experience. And to be honest, Jordan Eberle to get some playoff experience. Like, there's a lot of teams that are still kind of have to take those baby steps. And the same thing with Toronto and Calgary. It's still too early for them. So to go start selling off prospects to kind of take a big charge and hopefully try to win one or two playoff rounds, I don't think the payoff is really worth it. So I thought a lot of teams were really kind of smart, and I know a lot of people question what Montreal was doing, and I know it reeked of Claude Julien maybe really being in Marc Bergevin's ear and saying, listen, I need the kind of players that I had in Boston. Let's get tougher. Let's get grittier and more sandpaper. And I think to an extent that's a bit of a silly idea, but they didn't spend a whole lot to do that. And it's not like they sold off Mikhail Sergachev to get bigger and beefier. So if anything, a lot of these teams kind of stayed with the status quo with a couple of complementary pieces, and probably that was the right move this year.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show talking about the trade deadline. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Is it fair, Michael, in your estimation, to call Steve Yzerman a wizard, or is he a warlock?
What's in this regard to?
You know, being able, just the moves that he made, you know, in regards to the trade deadline, getting rid of the Valtteri Filppula contract, you know, right. He gets Mark Streit back, he then flips Mark Streit. It just seemed like he's a guy who, a team that had serious salary cap issues entering in on Wednesday.
And the Bishop deal, I guess, too.
The Bishop deal, to some extent. You know, when Wednesday comes to an end, all of a sudden the Lightning have this salary cap room that they can play with. They can now protect different players that they might not have been able to protect prior to Wednesday because of no movement clauses. Just seems like Steve Yzerman is always able to work the system as well, if not as any general manager in the league.
Yeah, you're right. I guess I put him in Stan Bowman territory there. And Bowman actually has to give away a lot of, I guess, maybe not core players, but close to core players over the years, and he's able to get it done. Like, I guess that Tampa's challenge now is to kind of be that perennial cup contender team over and over again. And I'm still surprised that Jonathan Drouin is playing for the Lightning, to be honest, and that they were able to re-sign Kucherov, Hedman, and Stamkos at market value or even under market value in some cases, especially when you look at what Kucherov's been able to do as a top 10 scorer in the league this year. So, yeah, Wizard Warlock. He's got some cajones, that's for sure. And the Valtteri Filppula one is an interesting one because I think a lot of people are expecting him to come to Toronto, and it's just kind of funny. Another wrinkle there where Toronto's getting kind of a reputation as a veteran graveyard where Lou Lamoriello kind of makes players disappear either in the minors or put them on what's now being referred to as a Stefan Robida Island, where you quote-unquote get injured and you just don't get seen anymore. You just pick up a paycheck every week.
Mm-hmm.
So the reputation is going out there, and I think that's why Terry Filppula kind of said, no, they're not on my tradable list here. Let's go somewhere where I can actually play hockey and contribute. And it is interesting that Yzerman's able to get some value for these guys.
Mike, Chicago's won 6 games in a row, 9 of their last 10. When you look at the Western Conference and how bad it's been this year, would you say that Chicago is back to being the best team in the West?
Oh, 100%. They're my pick to go to the final this year. And originally I had Tampa-Chicago, kind of a rematch. I'm changing that now. I actually think that the Rangers might sneak in, as crazy that might sound. I kind of like some of the moves they were able to make. I like Brennan Smith. I think Hank's playing a little better in that. And I just think that team is just so battle-tested that they might go. But from the West, I don't really – like, I know San Jose is probably going to be their biggest impediment to get to the cup final, but how can you bet against Jonathan Toews, especially the way he's playing? Like, he turned it on in the second half, and Patrick Kane the other night was just unreal with that hat trick. So, that's the team for me from the West. I actually think Chicago probably the cup favorites, to be honest.
Michael, you know, oftentimes years ago that, you know, if there was a player that, like a Jacob Trouba or Duchesne, they got traded away around this time. Now it seems like general managers are hanging on to their those players and it's working out, or Drouin comes to mind from last year. Why do you think they're holding on to the stars at trade deadline, and why do you think it seems to be working out that the team seem to kind of able to work things out with those players later on?
It's just so hard to get them. Like, if you got a Jacob Trouba in your lineup, You don't give that guy up, because how do you find another one? You've got to get lucky in the draft again. Like, Trouba wasn't a top 3 pick, and even if he was, like, how many times are you going to be in the top 3 draft? So I think from the beginning, Cheveldayoff was, like, really stuck to his guns in the sense that we can't give this guy up because you're not going to get fair market value back for him. And when you've got a defenseman that's going to be able to log close to 25 minutes a night, well, there's not a whole lot around the league at that age that can do that with his upside. So I think more teams are doing that. We saw it last year with Duran. A couple of years ago, Nazem Kadri. Even last year, Nazem Kadri didn't look like he was going to be long for this market and was going to get traded. And now everyone's talking about him in the Selkie conversation and how he might be a long-term piece for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I'm not so sure that Matt Duchesne has basically played his last season in Colorado, or that Gabriel Landeskog is not going to be the captain next year. I have a feeling, especially after Colorado traded Ryan O'Reilly and didn't get a whole lot of great pieces back for him when you look at the return, that they're thinking, okay, like, if we trade these guys, how do we take a step forward? How is this not just taking 2 steps back? Because really what Colorado's missing is a couple of defensemen, and maybe you can get that in this year's draft. Maybe you can trade some complimentary pieces for that. But to trade your core players in today's NHL with the salary cap, what it is, and how free agency, no one seems to really get that far. It's almost like shooting yourself in the foot now.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. Which trade that didn't happen was most peculiar to you? The Coyotes holding on to Radim Verbata or the Sabres holding on to Dmitry Kulikov?
I'm going to say Vancouver holding on to Ryan Miller.
Really?
Like, if you're going full rebuild here, let's go full rebuild. Let's sell off every single player. And I know the Sedins are a tough one to get rid of, and they weren't rentals, but the fact that Ryan Miller is still there, I don't see it, especially when you've got Thatcher Demko in the system and you've got some other pieces there. So if you're rebuilding, you don't need Ryan Miller eating up cap space, and you don't need what he provides you, considering that you could have got a healthy return, whether you're sending him to Calgary or Edmonton as a number two option.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, always appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
All right, thanks, boys. Have a great weekend.
Likewise, Michael. We'll do it again soon. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll play the TSN panel's comments about the Jets and bandy those about. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Mouthful. Here on TSN 1290.
Legal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, big thanks to Michael Trakos for joining us. Still to come in about 10 minutes' time, start of hour number two, Jason Botterill, assistant general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, is set to join us. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Keener Jerseys, tell them a Legal Curve sent you, the best place to get all your jersey customization taken care of. On Wednesday, as part of the Trade Center package, Trade Center News, Trade Center Time to Fill, the TSN panel bandied about the state of the Winnipeg Jets with some very pointed and some very interesting comments, particularly about the Jets' goaltending situation and the Jets' defensive structure. This is what the TSN panel had to say.
For a team that has a 3.8% chance of making the playoffs, in the history of 3.8% teams, they're as close to winning a Stanley Cup. I mean, I just watch them play every night. I love the star power up front. I love their D-core. If they could ever just figure out the goaltending situation and kind of systematically learn how to lock things down. Discipline has always been a factor with these guys the last few years. But if they can sort those things out, they can be dangerous. It's got to happen sooner than later, though. Year after year, you can't keep saying they've got kids coming, they've got young prospects. They're good players right now. Now they got to win.
We also have Gary Lawless, who covers the Jets on a day-to-day basis for us in Winnipeg. And we know the number one situation, as Sarah mentioned, this goaltending thing has been hanging over them this year and before. What do you think is the immediate answer at number one?
Michael Neuwirth is a guy we have heard his name. James, it sounds like he may be trading, maybe signing with the Philadelphia Flyers. Chad Johnson and Anders Nilsson, players like that, guys that are not necessarily automatic number ones, but not number twos, young enough that they can compete and share the load with Connor Hellebuck.
Do you agree with that, Marty?
I agree that if you're looking for a quick fix and give Hellebuck some time, you look for Chad Johnson. I'm not sure about Anders Nilsson in that role. I think he's a true backup. But if you're not sure on Hellebuck, looking forward, I'm looking at Marc-Andre Fleury. For 2 years, you can have a really good goaltender to give your team stability. Maybe wait for the next up-and-coming in your far team. Eric Comrie is that guy. So if you're sure on Hellebuck, Chad Johnson would be my pick.
By the way, I can't cover up extraneous audio. As I was asking Gary the question, I hit the Siri button on my phone.
So today you...
She answered your question, though. She says, I can't answer that.
Pierre McGuire, I know you've been listening to that goaltending situation. Your two cents on that.
We're skirting the issue here. Nobody wants to address the elephant in the room. Outside of Colorado, this is the worst structured defensive team in the league. Their defensive zone coverage is atrocious. You don't know what you're getting from night to night. It's not always about the goaltenders. The goaltenders are getting hung out to dry here. You don't know what you're getting night to night from that defense corps. It's simple, rudimentary fundamentals in their own zone. They're not practicing them very well. I know they've had some injuries on defense, but everybody skirts the issue on Winnipeg all the time. It needs to be addressed. They need to be better in their own zone as a group. It's not just a defenseman. It's the entire team concept. And until they buy into it, you're going to have this regardless as to who the goaltender is there.
Accurate?
They don't defend well. They don't kill penalties very well. I mean, their penalty killing's among the worst in the league. And then you get to the goaltenders who they rolled the dice and went with the two younger guys this year, and they just weren't ready to play. So you've had a really inconsistent year from Dustin Byfuglien. I'm not sure if you know night to night what you get from Byfuglien, and you should know. I mean, I know there's going to be a little bit of swings to his game because he's a bit of an unpredictable player, but he's not had a very good year. Toby Enstrom has had a terrible year. They haven't had Tyler Myers all year. Their defense is not very good. The best story on the Jets' defense is Josh Morrissey. He's had a terrific year for them, but it's not good enough. They don't keep the puck away from the net enough, and they don't stop it when it gets there.
897 save percentage for their tandem. That's not good enough. You talked about when 901, 902 may get you there and think, oh, we got something, but 897 is bad.
Okay, you're a goalie, right? If what's in front of you is scrambled eggs most of the time, you're not going to have a 915 save percentage.
Certain goalies are pretty good at it. Certain goalies excel in the scrambled eggs department. You know, they make something out of nothing, but it doesn't look like that is what is happening in Winnipeg. But if you're a goalie and you know that's going to be the case, you adjust your style. You just try to stay a little bit more conservative. You're not challenging it out.
But easier when you're a veteran as opposed to a young guy, no?
Absolutely. But Connor Hellebuyck is saying, my game is 10 times better now than it was when the season started. Okay, well, what it is? What is it, right?
He's very sure of himself.
That's what's troubling to me.
Paul Maurice had an interesting comment when he talked about the pressure and the uniqueness of trying to develop young players and how hard it was. Now, he hadn't even talked to Line A about the defensive side and just said, just play hockey, and that can't go through the whole team like that. You might handle Line A a little bit differently, but that message has got to be different to everybody else.
The other thing hanging over this team is Jacob Trouba, as we bring in Gary Lawless once more, who asked to be traded and only returned when no deal could be reached. How do you feel that will play out?
Trouba asked to be traded because he said he wanted the opportunity to play the right side and to be a number one defenseman and get number one minutes. He's got both those things right now. Everything that he said he wanted that was forcing the trade request, he has now. So they're eligible to sign him to an extension this summer. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff will push for that. We'll find out if Kurt Overhart and Jacob Trouba are open to that or if there's something else, like playing in Canada, that is an issue for Trouba.
That's the TSN hockey panel from this past Wednesday's Trade Center talking about the Winnipeg Jets. I think some particularly pointed comments from both Ray Ferraro and Pierre Maguire about the Jets' defensive structure, their lack thereof. You don't often hear, I think, criticisms to that level bandied about. Those guys certainly weren't shy about handing out some criticism towards the Winnipeg Jets, towards the players, and towards, I have to assume, the coaching staff as well.
How many people were in that clip, by the way? You had Marty Biron, Gary Lawless, Dave Poulin, James Duffy, Pierre Maguire,
Ray Ferraro.
It seemed like there was like seven guys in that clip, at least five. But, you know, you hear this from some of the best hockey analysts in the game, and I don't disagree with a lot of what was said there. And you know, we know that the goaltending has not been good in Winnipeg. I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum. Connor Hellebuyck has struggled, even though he's playing probably his best hockey of the year right now, picking up the shutout last night. But the defensive zone structure is an interesting comment by Pierre Maguire, and then Ray Ferraro was expanding on what Pierre Maguire was saying. And I agree, and I think that, you know, the goaltender is obviously the last line of defense, but many times they have really hung him out to dry, Drew, whether it's Connor Hellebuyck, Michael Hutchinson, or Andre Pavlik. So I think that, to me, that's the biggest concern for this Jets team, and that's why I've said this for, I don't know, two or three years now, that the biggest need for the
record,
Jets is a shutdown left-side defenseman. And Toby Enstrom is not a shutdown defenseman. And I've had, my criticisms of Toby Enstrom in the past.
You're not usually an overwhelmingly critical guy. You don't, I mean, and I say that with respect, that you don't usually like to, quote unquote, call out players, but you have been, not inaccurately, you've been quite accurate with your criticisms of Toby Enstrom.
I just don't think Toby Enstrom is a very good defenseman.
Yeah.
I don't think he's that good of an offensive defenseman either. He's got one goal this year.
Yeah, I think he's got 14 points or something.
And, you know, you could say, well, is it because he makes that much money? Well, no. I mean, he's a top pairing defenseman. And I think he's being slotted
as a top pairing defenseman.
Right. And right. I don't think he is. So I look at the Jets, and, you know, last night he had a great game. I agree that, you know, Enstrom had a great game. But the game before that, he was on the ice for the first three goals with Buff. Yeah. So I think that is the biggest need for the Jets. In addition to bringing in a veteran backup goaltender, I think they need a prototypical shutdown defenseman, a guy like a Mark Stahl. That's what I think this team needs.
Dave, you're
not saying that the Jets should go out and trade for Mark Stahl, because I don't think the Rangers are going to trade Mark Stahl. I'm just saying a defenseman like that.
In that ilk.
Yeah.
So somebody like that. I understand. Dave, your thoughts on the comments that came from, you know, particularly Ray Ferraro, particularly Pierre Maguire in that clip we just played?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that you can blame the defensive woes on one particular area. I think that there's been problems in all facets of the game, and whether it's the forwards properly back-checking and covering their men, whether it's the defensemen being in the right position to prevent good goal-scoring chances, or if it's the goaltenders making the saves that they need to make when the opportunity presents itself. I think, realistically, with this Jets team, I think we've seen all three of those facets of the game kind of strike them, you know, at times throughout the year. So you can't – I don't think there's one area with which to, you know, be able to say this is – you're going to be able to fix this and suddenly you're going to fix the Jets. I simply think that they're a young team. They're going to improve. I think it's tough when you're trying to make – you know, I think the biggest error, if you want to call it that, was not having a veteran goalie to offset – a young goalie in Connor Hellebuyck, because generally, you know, that when we talk development, we talk about the AHL, not the NHL. So if you are going to develop a goalie, you'd rather him develop behind someone who's more established, like a Marc-Andre Fleury, a Ryan Miller, that sort of idea. So that's kind of what my thought is.
I want to cycle back to this conversation. I want to play Paul Maurice's comments from yesterday, but we'll do that a little bit later in the show. Jason Botterill, assistant general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, is on the line. We're going to quickly go to break. We'll come back with Jason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Out Hockey Show, hour number two, up next here on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in the studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Pittsburgh Penguins make their only visit to Winnipeg this coming Wednesday. We're pleased to welcome to the program Jason Botterill, the Associate General Manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jason, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Hope all is well in Winnipeg.
It is. Hope all is well with yourself in Pittsburgh there, Jason.
Yes, things are going pretty well.
Excellent. No doubt about it. The Penguins, of course, third right now in the Metropolitan Division, tied with the Blue Jackets. The Blue Jackets, of course, with a game in hand in what has turned out to be certainly the most competitive division in the NHL this season. Trade deadline, Jason, having just come and gone, you were certainly one of the more active teams prior to the deadline, acquiring a number of different players, a number of different defensemen. You know, in particular, the injuries that Olli Maatta and Trevor Daley suffered, how much did that factor into the Penguins' plans for what happened at the trade deadline this past week?
Well, I think it just sort of magnified our situation. When we had our meetings sort of at the start of February with our management staff and our coaches and our pro scouts, adding a little more depth to our defensive blue line was our focus to begin with. And then you have both Maatta, Daley, and obviously Chris Letang's all set of our lineup right now. We realized going into it, this is an area that we had to sort of look at and try to see if we could add a little more depth, players that could fit our system a little bit here. And Jim Rutherford, I think, has a track record of being a GM who likes to make trades, likes to tweak his lineup a little bit there. And we were very excited about bringing both Mark Strait and Ron Hainsey into our lineup. You saw last night, Strait had a goal and assist. Hainsey, I think, played 25 minutes. So they've come in right off the bat and helped our team at the National Hockey League level. And bringing in a young defenseman like Frankie Corrado down to Wilkes-Barre, we feel it's a scenario where hopefully get accustomed to our style of play down in Wilkes-Barre. And, you know, whether it's later on this year or early next year, could be a player that can help us in up at the National Hockey League level also.
Jason, another one of those moves that was made by the Penguins on Wednesday was trading Eric Fair, Steve Alexie, and a fourth-round pick to the Toronto Maple Leafs, as you mentioned, for Frank Corrado. What was this move made more so to free up cap space for the Penguins?
It was to free up cap space, but also to bring a young defensive asset into our organization. You look at it, our organization has really done a 180 in probably like 4 or 5 years here. We used to have a plethora of young defensemen within our system, and a lot of them have now graduated to the National Hockey League, such as a Derek Pouliot or a Brian Dumoulin, or have been utilized in different trades over the last couple of years. So it's a scenario where we don't have a lot of depth from our defensive standpoint there. And the same token, we're very excited about some of our forward crew. You saw last year players such as Connor Sheary and Brian Rust coming up into the lineup, and I think again this year Jake Gensel's turned pro and has been, you know, has played time alongside Sidney Crosby so far this year. We have players in the minors such as Oscar Sundquist and Josh Archibald, who we feel are close to being NHL ready too. So we just felt it was a position of strength forward within our organization, and wanted to strengthen our defense corps a little bit too.
Jason, with the NHL salary cap staying pretty stagnant from year to year, how much more valuable are draft picks considered to be in today's NHL?
Well, it's always so key, and it's been discussed. Obviously, you look over the last few years here, the success of some of these cap teams that have continued to have success, such as a Chicago Blackhawks or a Los Angeles Kings. You have to have young guys coming through the system, and you just look at our success last year in the second half. It was because all these young players who Mike Sullivan had down in Wilkes-Barre in the first part of the year, we're able to come up and not only just come up and, you know, play in the National Hockey League, we're able to come up and contribute. You had Connor Sheary playing on the top line alongside Sidney Crosby. You had Brian Dumoulin playing on the top pairing alongside Chris Letang. And obviously you had Matt Murray in net. So obviously we were very blessed in Pittsburgh to have the star power in Crosby, Malkin, and Letang and Kessel. But that certainly eats up a lot of cap space. If we don't have these young players coming through and playing big roles for us, we're not going to have success.
Jason Botterill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason is the Associate General Manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins into Winnipeg on Wednesday to meet the Jets at MTS Center. And Jason, you were just talking about Mike Sullivan. Of course, he is your head coach, and he previously was the head coach of your AHL franchise. That organizational consistency, the ability to sort of seamlessly fit a head coach from one system to another and to fit the players coming up through your pipeline from the AHL to the NHL. How important has that been for the Penguins' long-term success? I mean, we know the guys, the big-name guys, the Crosbys, the Malkins, the Kessels, but sort of the guys who are maybe less well-known, just how important to your organization has it been to be able to fit those guys seamlessly into the dressing room?
Well, it's been key to our success, and we've been very fortunate, whether it's been Mike Sullivan down in Wilkes-Barre, John Hines had a long tenure down in Wilkes-Barre, Todd Reardon, who's now with the Washington Capitals, was down there, Dan Bylsma. We've had an amazing sort of run of coaches down at Wilkes-Barre there that have done a great job in working with our young prospects to get to the National Hockey League. And what I've liked about our situation in Wilkes-Barre is they've done a great job with sort of the higher-end players, even going all the way back to Chris Letang spending some time down there. You see it with, you know, Brian Dumoulin was a second-round pick, a big acquisition for us in the Jordan Saul trade. We had high-end players down there that have had success coming through Wilkes-Barre. But we've also had players such as, you know, Connor Sheary, Carter Rowney. These players started on American Hockey League contracts that turned into National Hockey League contracts that obviously have ended up having success in the National Hockey League here now. So the fact that they've done an excellent job down there from a development on the high-end players, as long as finding sort of diamonds in the rough, has really helped our team out a lot here in Pittsburgh. And, you know, we feel it's an entire organizational effort to try to have that success. It's our amateur scouts looking for developing and drafting the right players. It's our development team right now with Mark Recchi, Bill Guerin, Mike Buckley, putting a huge emphasis on getting down to Wilkes-Barre, working with our coaches a lot down there. And now our head coach in Wilkes-Barre is Clark Donatelli, who spent some time in Wheeling. And you just look at our team, you know, right now we have, you know, Kunackle, Rowney, Archibald, all these forwards who actually spent some time in Wheeling and now have played up in the National Hockey League. It's something we're certainly proud about.
Jason, how did your time as a pro scout with the Dallas Stars help you with your current role as Associate General Manager of the Pens?
Well, I think whenever you can go any scenario, it's you're learning from some of the best people there. And in Dallas, I had the opportunity to be brought in and learn under Doug Armstrong and Les Jackson, two people that I have had a ton of respect for in the game of hockey. Then it allowed when I came into Pittsburgh right off the bat, I'm learning under Ray Shiro and Chuck Fletcher, two general managers who have gone on to have success in the league also. So I think as much as you have a lot of motivation and you think you know quite a bit about this game, if you don't have that right mentorship, you're not going to have success.
Jason, the trade deadline was a little quieter than usual, and a lot of that was attributed to the upcoming expansion draft. How much time have the Penguins management team spent focusing on the expansion draft?
Well, fortunately, we're in a situation where we feel pretty comfortable where we're at, but it is certainly. It's been something that we've been talking about for since last summer and stuff, once we knew Vegas was coming into the league. I do think, though, a lot of teams, there wasn't a lot of actions around the deadline. You just see the parity in the league, and I don't think a lot of teams wanted to maybe mortgage their future to be big buyers, but I don't think they wanted to be viewed as sellers. They still felt they had a chance to make the playoffs and make a run. And we're a classic example of it. As long as, last year we had a good second half and just found a way to get in, and obviously was able to go all the way to winning the Stanley Cup. So I think a lot of teams still feel that there is that opportunity there, so there wasn't a lot of players on the market. And plus, I think teams are concerned about the expansion draft, and certainly was leading up to if they could fix or resolve problems, they were going to do that before Wednesday. But I think the main focus is always still to have success in the playoffs, and there will certainly be time, in June to make some adjustments before the expansion draft. But I do think June will certainly be a very busy time in our industry.
Jason Botterill, Penguins Associate General Manager, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason, this is now your third season working closely with Penguins General Manager Jim Rutherford. In those three seasons, now having spent that much time with him, what would you say his biggest strength is as a GM?
Well, I'd say it's just his willingness to make a trade, willingness to make adjustments. He does a great job in interacting with his staff and understanding, relying on a pro scouts, or if we're talking about someone on the amateur side, making sure that we're checking in with the amateur group. It was an adjustment for him to come to Pittsburgh from Carolina. The staff here in Pittsburgh was certainly a lot bigger than Carolina, but he trusts the people in the positions there. He listens to their opinion, and the biggest thing that I've always liked is if you give him a recommendation, and he usually tries to go out there and make something accomplish, whether it's a huge trade that we did a couple of years ago to bring Phil Kessel in, or make an adjustment for Justin Schultz last year at the deadline, or bring in a guy like Ron Hainsey. I think he has a great feel for what the team needs, whether it's a big splash or adding a complimentary player to the group.
Jason, for an undrafted player, how has Chris Kunitz managed to be so effective for so many years?
It's an amazing story with Chris, and we were very, very fortunate to pick him up there from Anaheim years ago, and he's been a great sort of compliment to Sidney Crosby. He's been a player that's an amazing professional about his off ice, the way he handles things on ice. Nothing rattles him too much. I love the way he plays. It's such a north-south game, yet he has that ability to make the small low passes in there. But there's a simplicity to his game. It's getting hard and in on the forecheck. It's going to the net. And obviously it's worked doing extremely well, whether it's with Sidney Crosby, whether it's Yevgeny Malkin, and just the way he handles himself at the start of the year, midway through this year, things weren't going as well for Chris. It was a scenario where he was actually put on the fourth line for a little bit. Was there any complaining or anything like that? No, he actually relished the role of being a PKer a little bit more and worked his way back up to the top line. But it's an amazing story if you look at it. Just coming from Saskatchewan, being undrafted out of Fair State, but then not even that, being on waivers twice, I believe, before really having success at the National Hockey League level. It's a huge compliment to him that he's just been able to stay focused and being such a professional for so many years here now.
Jason, the NHL is always tinkering with the game, especially during the offseason, experimenting with rule changes. Are there any changes that you would like to see implemented?
I have a lot of time for our game right now where it's at. I think I know there's a lot of debate over the point system. personally, I prefer a system that has a fixed amount of points that you can win, so it's a three-point game for no matter which game is played. Mm-hmm. But overall, I've liked what the adjustments they've made in the National Hockey League in the last few years, and especially just looking at our own division. I've really loved our interdivision games this year, our games against Columbus, Washington, New York. They've been high tempo, a lot of intensity, a great pace to the game. So I'm looking forward to that come playoff time, too.
Jason, we'll let you go on this last question. And the Penguins have obviously been blessed with having two number one goaltenders in Matt Murray and, of course, Marc-Andre Fleury. And I'm not really expecting you to address the future of either of those two goaltenders as we approach the end of the year, as we approach the expansion draft. But in this day and age, in this NHL, is it almost incumbent on most teams that the most successful teams do have that sort of 1A and 1B, that almost the workload is too much just for one guy to be able to carry the ball 65, 70 games a year? Are teams better off having that that comfortable situation where you can go with two number one goalies at any given time?
Well, I'm sure, obviously this point is debated a ton through organizations throughout the league. But from our standpoint, we just feel it's imperative to have that that 1-2 punch. You look at our playoffs last year, we utilized three goalies. Yeah. We used Marc-Andre, Matt Murray, and Jeff Zotkoff for the first two games against the New York Rangers. So we felt we're not planning to do that this upcoming year, but we certainly felt the need to have two strong goalies heading into the playoffs. And you just look at our schedule for the month of March. We have, I believe it's 16 games in the month of March. We have travel out to Western Canada and back. It's impossible for one goalie to, say, carry the load for 80 to 90% of that time. So in our eyes, it's a must to have if you want to really try to make a run for the Stanley Cup.
You get back to Winnipeg often, Jason?
I don't get off back too often, just once in a while. Grandma always gives me a hard time for not getting back a little bit more, but always certainly like to get back. I enjoy getting back a little bit more in July and August than I do in the middle of January.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. Jason Botterill is the Associate General Manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins will be in town on Wednesday to meet the Jets. Jason, appreciate your time and your insight this morning. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Take care, Jason. Thanks again.
I know.
Bye-bye. Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to talk about Paul Maurice's comments in regards to Mike Babcock, in regards to the Toronto media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Great conversation just now with Jason Botterill, Associate General Manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. In case you missed any of that conversation, we'll have it up on the website, illegalcurve.com. You can also just download the entire show on via iTunes, subscribe, get it sent to you each and every week. Great conversation. We'll have that for you coming up very shortly. Still to come on the show, Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche and Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks. They're going to join us both in the final hour. This segment of the show is brought to you by our friends at Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Earlier in the program, we played the TSN panel's comments about the Winnipeg Jets, the goaltending issues, the defensive structure issues, the youth. Paul Maurice, some pointed comments yesterday in his pregame scrum talking about both the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mike Babcock, and I think the Toronto media in general. Here's what Paul Maurice had to say, tongue-in-cheek, yesterday.
The mistakes that I made, I did just a horrible job in relation to my colleague Mike Babcock in selling our age and the mistakes. So when they've lost a game, it's just a wonderful learning experience, and they win, it's a triumph of character, and we have the opposite thing going on here, right? So, but that's my choice, because I don't ever want to walk into a season and say we're not here to win the Stanley Cup. We've got some younger players in that we think are now confident, and they're learning. right? They're getting better at the right reads, chipping pucks out, chipping pucks in. So that was my tact with these with this younger group, to let them make some mistakes.
Don't often hear a head coach in the NHL, no matter how facetious they might be in the course of the comments. You don't often hear them cite another NHL head coach with a bit of bite to it. You know, oftentimes you'll hear, you know, it's usually a fraternity, a little bit of buddy-buddy, what a great job. Those were some comments. I'm not 100% sure what Paul Murray, what the point of his comments there were, what he thinks he can achieve by bringing Mike Babcock into the dressing room, into the press conference, into the conversation whatsoever. From my perspective, Mike Babcock has done a better job with Paul Maurice, with his team than Paul Maurice has done with the Winnipeg Jets. So I'm not sure why Paul Maurice is shining a spotlight on that.
Well, I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't in a playoff spot right now, Drew, and you could say that, you know, there weren't many expectations for the Toronto Maple Leafs, so Babcock's going to do a better job there. But look, it's very difficult to say that one coach has done a better job than another coach, in my opinion, right? It's pretty easy when you look at if they're a playoff team or not. You'd say, okay, well, you know, that's a good coach. But let's be honest, with the Colorado Avalanche or the Arizona Coyotes, I don't think it matters who the coach is. I don't necessarily know that Jared Bednar has done a poor job in Colorado, because it's such a horrible team, right?
I think he's probably actually done an adequate job.
Right. So I don't think if Ken Hitchcock was there, or whoever, Lindy Ruff, Paul Maurice, it doesn't matter. I don't think anybody's getting that Avalanche team into the playoffs. But, I mean, we spend a lot of time, you know, talking about the Jets, obviously, on this show, and Paul Maurice, and a lot of people were, you know, calling for his head earlier in the season. I wasn't one of those people.
I was, in the interest of honest, well, and open disclosure,
and
of course.
Well, sure, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. But, and you look at, you know, where the Jets are now, 3 points out of a playoff spot, 4 points out of a playoff spot, whatever it is. The point is that they're right in the thick of the playoff race, and that's where you expected the Jets to be. Now, going back to what we were talking about before we had Jason Botterill on, by the way, that was a great interview. When you're talking about the defensive zone structure, the goaltending, I mean, it hasn't been good this year, guys. It was good last night. The Jets picked up the 3-0 win over the St. Louis Blues, so it was impressive the way they played, and you wonder, why can't they do this night after night? And you look at what the Jets have done against the Blues, beating them 4 times. They've defeated the Blackhawks 4 times. I mean, this Blackhawks team is still a top team. They've gone into Chicago. They've played with structure, and they've played with, you know, discipline, but then other times they don't. So, I mean, it goes back to what we've been talking about since, what, November or December, the Jekyll and Hyde nature of this team. Now,
but isn't that, from your perspective, to some extent, the defensive, the structure in the D zone, some of the inconsistency that the Jets have displayed for the last number of years? Isn't that a fair bit of that fall onto the coaching staff?
Sure, absolutely. And it falls on Paul Maurice, it falls on Charlie Huddy, Jamie Compan, everybody. And for me, it's more so the personnel that the Jets have, the style that they play. Look at Buff. I mean, Buff is a guy who roams around, and that's what makes him effective. Look at yesterday. He had an excellent game yesterday on the power play, even strength, everything. And the rest of the way that this team is composed, I think, sometimes lends to a little bit of chaos in their own zone. And I think the Jets, if you look at, you know, when they've had success, it is when they play with the defensive structure, and the games are a little bit low scoring. I mean, look at the game against the Minnesota Wild, and you had Ryan Suter, who was out after the first period. But those types of games, it always seems like the Jets are more comfortable in playing those games where it's back and forth, trading chances. Because look at the players they have, right? Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers, Little, Wheeler. I mean, they have guys that can skate and create plays and score goals, right? So I think sometimes the Jets get a little bit out of that defensive structure, depending on the team they're playing, depending on the type of game it is. If it's a high-scoring game, it's almost like sometimes the Jets forget to play defense, right? So I don't think that the Jets can't play with a certain amount of structure in their own zone, and they can't play well defensively. Case in point, last night, Drew, right? And Hellebuck has 4 shutouts. You could say in all of those 4 games, the Jets have had pretty good defensive structure, right? So why can't they do it for 82 games? That's the million-dollar question.
Well, I think it's the maddening inconsistency, Dave.
Yeah, and I mean, I took Paul Maurice's comments just from hearing them, I think it's more of a shot at the media than it would be at Mike Babcock.
The Toronto media.
Toronto media, yeah.
For being too critical of him, while at the same time, the same things happen in Toronto, they're praising Babcock for playing the kids and for letting them grow and things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain sycophantic nature to the media in Toronto for all things Leafs, when you listen to it. And I think, and we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't think that Paul Maurice and is aware of what's being said about him and about his team. I mean, he pays attention. He's a coach. He knows what is being said about, this organization. He's, that's part of his job, is to be aware of what others are saying. You know what I mean? So from his perspective, he hears it and he hears the things that are being said. And remember, he was in the media for a while and working for TSN. So I think he would probably be directing his comments more towards them than he is towards another coach. That's, again, my own interpretation of what he's saying. But, I mean, there's definitely some validity to the comments, like in terms of, his team has shown a maddening level of inconsistency. And so you sit there and you see that road trip where they, play so well against Pittsburgh, beat Montreal, beat Ottawa. You're playing, go into an overtime game against Toronto. So you're thinking to yourself, where's that team? And then, you see games like the Colorado games that they've lost, or the Phoenix, the Arizona games they've lost, and you think to yourself, well, where was that team? Or even Tuesday night. I know that, they're coming off the bye week and teams haven't been successful. But to get into that kind of like racehorse match with the Minnesota Wild, one of the top teams in the Western Conference, you can't afford to do that. You can't afford to break down your structure. So why can't you do that? And I think there is a certain, he's basically saying, I could attribute it to the youth, but I'm not going to. And that's part of the problem, right? Is that you're sitting there going, well, why can't you do this?
I think it's quite the bizarre world that we're living in, where all of a sudden the Winnipeg media, of which, of course, we include ourselves, the Winnipeg media are somehow more harsh than the Toronto media. I think things have maybe flipped around a pretty 180 degrees there, if that is the argument that Paul Maurice is trying to make, that the Toronto media is
soft. I don't know that he's absolving Winnipeg media. I think he's simply directing his ire towards the Toronto media from that comment.
But guys, just look at the numbers. I mean, look at the amount of times the Jets have let in three or four or more goals, right? Just look at the way the goals against per game. I mean, it's bottom five, the penalty kill. I mean, it's not like we're pointing anything out that isn't obvious, right? I mean, this is obvious. And the bright point for the season is that the Jets are scoring up there with any other team in the league, really. And Patrick Laine had a 6-game point streak. He was rookie of the month. Mark Scheifele is what, fifth or sixth in the league in scoring right now. Nikolaj Ehlers is having a great year. We saw Blake Wheeler score 3 points yesterday. He's having a good year. I mean, the Jets can score. That's not the issue. Nobody is going to sit here and say that the issue is goals, because I think the Jets can really play run and gun with almost any team in the league, I would say. Mm-hmm. But it's keeping the puck out of their own net, and that's something that we haven't seen on a consistent basis. So, again, we sound like broken records here, and we are, but until you see that for 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row, we've really only seen it for bits and pieces throughout the year. Last night against St. Louis was an example.
Sure.
You look at that game, you're like, okay, the Jets are this is a structured defensive team. This is like the New Jersey Devils of 1999 or 2000. And then other times you watch them, and they look like an East Coast Hockey League team.
It is it's confounding situation. Maurice's comments are peculiar, I think, at best. Just, pressure is ramping up, I think, to some degree. We'll head to break. Before we go, what do you guys want to talk about in the next segment? Do you want to talk about Bill Peters' comments on Eddie Lack, or do you want to talk about trades to anticipate this summer? It's choose your own adventure here on a Legal Curve. Which one do you guys want?
Let's talk Eddie Lack.
Okay, Bill Peters.
Used to play for the Moose.
Yeah, Bill Peters' comments on Eddie Lack, coach throwing player under the bus. We'll play it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.